have before you today a fiscal note with a certain amount of explanation on the fiscal note about how much money we're going to be tied down with. I would suggest when you look at the fiscal note, the line you look at is the bottom line says funding. Not bottom line, but the top line on funding, the general fund, we're looking at $15,750,000. The fiscal impact of this particular bill. Start down the agenda here. On item one, it says, do we have any new suggestions, additions, or deletion on the title? That's on page one, lines 6 through 19. Any changes that the committee would have, or any changes that are necessary in your opinion? Senator Page.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the ownership of the land clearly stated in the title? In the authorizing the corporation to manage all property acquired by the corporation and transferred to the state, is that clear enough to specify that the land, both the surface and the subsurface, that come with the railroad belongs to the railroad? I'm just asking a question.
Mark, I want to ask you that. Are we covered on that now?
You might want to add in to own and manage. Managed is not in and of itself in a title.
On line 14, the corporation to manage and own all property acquired.
And Mr. Chairman, excuse me, I have one more piece of information to throw out to the committee on this. It does come from Senator Halpert, and I would agree with him on this. The reason for a strong title, which is what we're building here, is to project or to protect the bill in the other body from changes, from huge sweeping changes of intent that the Senate might have come up with, or any undesirable amendments. I can remember, this is so fresh in my mind, when I put my the horse bill on the floor this year under the title recreational uses in state parks, and the bill was very simple to allow horses and llamas and dogs in state parks as a user group, and someone on the floor tried to put an amendment involving firearms and the use of guns in state parks on the bill, because the title was very open and allowed that. On lines, I gave you the point, on lines 18 and 19, I would suggest that the title list the certain laws from which the corporation is exempt, as the exemptions are essential to this bill. And so maybe put in a laundry list of those laws that the corporation is exempt from. The idea, of course, is to build a tight title.
Anything else then on item one? We'll move on to item two, which is on page five, line 12. Basically, what they've asked is, says compensation for board members would apply to the chief executive officer, a salaried railroad executive officer, and the employee labor representative. Is this the intent of the committee? I don't believe we intended it at the time we cut this. Perhaps I'm wrong. That anyone who's already being paid, for example, if I remember any commissioner, for example,
Chairman, that might be true for the chief executive officer, obviously being paid to be at that course. But if somebody's representing employees that's out on the line someplace, unless something is provided in their personnel rules that this person continues to receive his salary, he may have to take day of annual leave or whatever in order to perform that duty. So I agree with your statement on the chief executive officer, but it would depend on how the board itself handled that. And I don't know whether I want to write something in the statutes on that, but that is a possibility.
Well, I might note here in paragraph B that per diem their travel expenses are there.
I know, but it isn't fair for the chief executive officer to continue his salary, get his per diem and so on to attend, to be part of this meeting, and the employees so the representative, and have to lose his day of pay out on whatever chore he's providing. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
or take up the annual leave or whatever.
Makes sense too, because your other executives on the board itself, there, that's why they're getting the 250. Well, then I think we're in business then, just without changing.
I think you could handle it other than the chief executive officer.
Sure. I would agree totally with Senator Gilman that, well, I think we should either eliminate the chief executive officer or state that the employee will be compensated at their normal salary rate or whatever, just so that the employee isn't losing a day's pay by attending a board meeting. They probably should be paid double that day. But at least that the employee's salary would be their normal daily salary for the attending this meeting.
I suppose we just let it ride like it is.
Well, because we don't want the executive officer of the railroad getting a double dipper.
Are they employees?
Or, yeah, we don't want either one to be double dipping. But we don't want to have one or the other lose a day's pay for participating. And the only
suppose you got a member of the board from Timbuktu up there somewhere, and he's a bank official or something. He's making lots of money too. He double dipping in.
He's not double dipping out of the same pot. Whoever he works for, that's their business of how he is.
Make some suggestion on how to do this.
I think if we make clear to the staff that our intent is to make sure that the employee representative of the railroad on the board does not lose a day's pay or any pay for participating on the board, staff could get appropriate language.
Problem?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, should we another Halford amendment here on page 4? Can I go back to page 4 before we lose it? On page 4, lines 9 through 13, states, one person who is not a resident of the state may be appointed by the governor to be a member of the board if at the time of appointment the person has at least 10 years of experience in railroad management. Because of the word may, with regard to residency, the requirement for 10 years' experience in the railroad is only operative if the individual is a non-resident. A change in sentence structure could require the 10-year experience and allow for non-residency.
Who may not be a resident, may be appointed by the governor.
Right. I don't have the suggested language in here, but because of the word, according to Senator Halford here, because of the word may, you could have someone that's an out-of-stater, but they don't necessarily have to have the 10 years experience.
That is the way I read it.
Well, that's not the way I read it either, but did you see his suggestion there, number 2? Maybe I'm reading his suggestion wrong.
Well, I think this thing works both ways.
Well, I think that's right.
At least the language part of it, because who is not a resident may be. Now, if he's a resident, he may be too.
That's right.
Because I remember we took the word shall.
That's right. Why don't we leave this until Senator Halford comes back and maybe he can tell us exactly.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, let's go back to the last amendment, which we're talking about the compensation.
Okay.
I think there's a key word in there. Senator Fakes, it says an appointed member of the board. The chief executive officer is not appointed. He is named in the bill.
Right.
So I think we leave it just
as it is.
And then,
because that takes care of the employee.
The employee gets $250 if they internally they want to say you have to take a day of leave to do that, then they can do that. But the key word in that was appointed.
All right.
not, because the way it reads, the way it reads is, the board consists of Commissioner of Commerce, the Chief Executive Officer, and 7 members appointed by the governor. Unless there's some legal...
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I think is that the union employee may get paid as well.
That's our problem, you know, that's...
The board figured out.
Yes.
Well, this is what I was talking about a while ago. I don't see any problem with that, really. Okay, number 2, we stay the way it is, no change. Number 3, page 8. Page 8, line 27. This provision received criticism. Shall item 4240.170, item B, be deleted from the bill and the section renumbered? It says the board may exclude from an executive session the chief executive officer of the corporation and the member appointed under 4240.420D if the subject of the session is related to labor relations or personnel contracts. Senator Fates.
Mr. Chairman, I would be in support of removing that language. I feel like if you've got a member of the board, they've got certain responsibilities that they want to run that railroad in the very best possible way. I think it's been documented that many corporations in the United States today, the most prominent one being Chrysler, has a member of labor, not only a member of labor, the president of labor, on their board. They certainly don't exclude him when the situation gets touchy or whatever. And I think if they're going to be members of the board, they should be allowed in there through the good times and the bad times. And I would support that eliminating.
Do I have a motion?
I would move that we eliminate line 27 through whatever it is, line 27 through line 1 on page 9.
Any objection? So ordered. Number 4, page 9, the provisions of this section appear to be open-ended, therefore could be construed to apply to situations where not in the best interest of corporation. Staff suggests as an alternative extended for the application of the rulemaking requirement. The suggested staff language would go at the end of the first sentence at line 19. At the end of the first sentence, a new sentence will be inserted to read, rules shall be adopted under this section for procedures which, in the determination of the board, will have a substantial impact on the public or be used in the authorities dealing with a significant segment of the public. The board shall adopt rules.
That is, as a question, is that intended to take the place of the first sentence that's in the current version?
That's my interpretation.
No, what I'm saying is, are we going to then come back and say the board shall adopt rules to carry out its functions and the purposes of this chapter after this sentence?
This sentence would follow the first sentence.
Well, then that would be on line 23. We'd insert
that's
sentence.
Right. Line 23 after the first sentence.
Okay. All right.
Why would these repetitions?
Well, I'm on that.
No, I don't think there are being repetitions. This new sentence would give it a standard as to what when they would have to adopt rules.
It refers to the same. All right, let's read it in this whole context. And the board shall adopt rules to carry out its functions and the purposes of this chapter, including rules to safeguard property owned, managed, or transported by the corporation, any protected employees and persons using the corporation's property or services. Period. Rules shall be adopted under this section for procedures which, in the determination of the board, will have a substantial impact on the public or be used in the authorities dealing with a significant segment of the public.
That's confusing.
Now, why? I don't know. I think it's.
That sounds like legal jargon.
Who would try to work on this?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, what you're trying to do is you're
Chairman, if I can, and I'm not trying to play a devil's advocate role, I really don't think it solves the problem because you've got two words in there that are eyes of the beholder, the words substantial and significant. And somebody can challenge that, saying that was substantial, you have, the board says this is not substantial, somebody else says it was. So you can have the same process. I think it's pretty clear that we're leaving the rulemaking authority up to the board, and the purposes of the chapter of the law are pretty well laid out. I feel comfortable myself using the existing language. I think if we add that sentence, we're going to maybe muddy more than we're clear.
So next item, page 14.
Mr. Chairman, I move we table item 5.
Next item is page 14, line 27, down near the bottom, and where it says annual report. Page 14, line 27, and you, 28, be inserted, notwithstanding any other provisions in this chapter.
Mr. Chairman,
we tabled that.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Line
6, I'm sorry. 6. Is over on 15. 6, page 15, requires corporation use employees preparation capital improvement program plan. A policy question. Is this necessary or desirable requirement? First.
Page 15,
line 23. It says, the employees of corporation shall prepare and revise the long-range capital improvement program plan. The board may not contract the preparation or revision of the plan.
I think that was a fake.
I'm sorry,
Mr.
Chairman. I don't think that implies.
We're on page 15, line 23, item 6 on our agenda.
Somebody must have said we don't want a whole bunch of planners out there, and we don't want them to, we want the employees, meaning the internal staff of the railroad, to do this long-range capital improvement planning. We don't want them to go out and contract with, you know,
EIS or
projecting
places. That university thing. What's that? ICER or whatever it is?
Let's don't use me.
I'm sorry.
Well, in essence, doesn't this be the same thing if you had another department or something? DOT does it within the same room. But they also go out and contract them. Some of the contracts they do is all both me.
Okay, so you want to eliminate the board may not contract with the preparation or revision of the plan? You want to keep the employees of the corporation shall
prepare. Oh, this question just came up. This is just one of the questions I asked the staff. Why did it come up?
I don't feel strongly about it one way or the
other. Mr. Chairman, I move that we delete item C, line 23, page 15.
Any objection?
Wait, yes, object. You want to keep the employees of the corporation. The corporation shall prepare and revise a long-range capital improvement and program.
I thought that was in someplace else. That's what we're saying.
Yes,
that's what we say in item A. The corporation shall prepare and the board shall adopt the long-range capital plan.
No, I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
They moved and approved that item C, line 23 through 25, will be deleted. So ordered. Item 7 is the next one, section 4240.290, use of corporation assets.
That's
not mine. That's the performance audit.
This performance audit was inadvertently left out by the director, and we'll come back in. But the language there, if you compare it to the language in draft 8.
What's the language in draft 8?
The language in draft 8 is, on a yearly basis, the board shall have a performance audit conducted by a recognized railroad management expert on all aspects of the master railroad operations. On a yearly basis, the board shall have a performance audit conducted by a recognized railroad management expert on all aspects of the Alaska Railroad operations.
Now, where is this going in?
This wording on 7 was replaced.
It was going there at line 25, right?
That's correct.
On page 15.
Yes. The performance audit will be brought back here, either under the old language or under the new language, one way or the other.
What was the terminology exactly where that's going to be added. Would it read transportation, communication? Transmission purposes.
Okay, starting on line 10.
Okay.
Portions of a utility corridor for transportation, communication, and transmission purposes, and for support functions associated with those purposes, or any other uses authorized under this chapter, if the use does not restrict other parallel uses of the utility corridor.
I mean, that we just keep putting a lot of words in and don't say anything. Doesn't that open up the whole thing to the whole bailiwick again?
Well, Mr. Chairman, one example. Oh, excuse me, sir.
We have made some changes back in the other body where we talked about municipal easements, municipal grants, and that language, by putting this language in there, we're specifying that it allows those and not building in a conflict. I think that's the purpose
was maybe recommending it. That's right. You still have the modifier that no uses can be made and restrict other parallel uses in right ways. That's still there. It's just that you conceivably have other kinds of activities going on in the right of way today that are not directly transportation, communication, or transmission purposes.
I have a problem.
But our revenue producing activities that benefit the railroad.
Does the language go in?
I move to go in.
Any objection? No order. Okay, item 9, page 15. Page 18, 4240.37 in line 3 does not mention the valuation of land to be transferred from DNR. Current DNR transfer of other agencies can be made for less than fair market value. Shall staff draft language stipulating that DNR may transfer for less than fair market value? For example, I guess we're going to run a railroad across a piece of state land and they needed it, and we can sell it to them cheaper.
DNR's got enough sense to handle that. God, if they have, they don't need to be transferring land.
No, they don't.
Well, let's just talk about that for a moment. in the DNR transfer to, say, Department of Transportation or a highway corridor, is there some transfer of funds that take place?
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, it's an ambiguity. There's a section in the law 3805.315 which talks about transfers of the land to state agencies or other political subdivisions and suggests that those transfers can be left for less than fair market value. Creates an issue as to whether this transfer will be subject to fair market value requirements and whether 315 would apply. I think it's almost a policy question as to how you want that transfer to occur and whether it should.
Well, there might be times when you don't want it to be from what's considered fair market value.
Well, that's why the may is in there, though. It's an allowable thing as far as the Department of Natural Resources is concerned. It's not mandated that it's less than fair market value. But I think the question that they're raising is we're trying philosophically to separate this and say it is not a state agency. And if 3805.315 says other state agencies, it could be the question again raised about subsidies in one form or another for the Alaska Railroad. And certainly if land was transferred from the DNR to the railroad, it could be construed to be a subsidy. And if we want that to be able to go forward, they're saying to us, should we write it in the law? Right?
Well, that's certainly a question. I think it's something you ought to think about.
Yes. One thing, number 11, that should also be taken into context here, because the staff asked here, should Title 38 apply to the railroad? And if not, Title 38 is the DNR man section, and currently it is under Title 38. I haven't exempted it in the back of the bill. And if you do want to exempt it from Title 38, you're going to take it out of the 315 situation. And then DNR will be forced to sell it at a great value.
Not going to stay the agency. It becomes a...
Well, I don't know. If you exempt from 215 from 38, Title 38, I don't know. Maybe that's not true, but it seems to me if you exempt from Title 38, you could have a double-edged sword there.
We have not exempted it from Title
38. That's one of the questions if you're going to be asked for number 11. Do you want to exempt from Title 38?
Item 11
passed,
so we want to correct that.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask the adult of the committee? I've not sat on resources. I'm not familiar with Title 38. Could someone give me a 3 or 4 minute synopsis of Title 38 and what we're talking about here?
You're not familiar with Title 38.
I mean, I don't know. When I'm asked to make a decision, should we exempt
I think it's too big a problem, a question, Mr. Chairman, to pass over that quickly. I think that's going to take some look-see, and it may delay us a bit. But that's
our staff at least take a look at that. We can probably make a report tomorrow if it's appropriate or whatever you do.
Mr. Chairman, I would not be in favor of DNR, of Title 38, overseeing railroad lands. The lands are coming with the railroad. I mean, to me, those are railroad lands. The railroad has those lands, and they based on the bill, what they will with for the best operation management railroad. But my question would lie in what I would want the research committee to look at is on the new land that the railroad would get. So the public policy of should the railroad be allowed to get those lands at no charge or for below fair market value? Should the railroad just take allowed to eliminate a lot of other processes in acquiring new land that any other private industry or private business or any jurisdiction would be allowed to do? I don't think that would be good public policy. Railroad lands are one thing, but new lands, I think, are something else. So I would like that report from the Resources Committee.
Mr. Chairman,
what will you make of that? It would waste the time. Is it all pockets to stay in any policy?
Out of 10. All right. Flag 9.
That's what the section, that only other section is going to be. Is new land coming out here on?
Right.
I don't understand. If you don't want, if you want that section in the bill,
right,
why are you going there every 3 years?
I guess I didn't say that. My thing is I don't know anything about it. First I've ever heard Title 28 was 5 minutes ago. 38. See, I don't even know the number of it. So I guess all I'm asking is if information the chair wants to make a decision on this, I'll go with that. I just don't have any basis of information to make a decision.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the staff be instructed to us to insert language that would say DNR may transfer for less than fair market value.
Is that under certain circumstances or?
No, the may allows the circumstances, which is consistent then with Title 38. By doing that, we are essentially saying for this purpose, the railroad can be recognized as a state agency.
Are we exempting it from 38 then?
Then I'm going to make the motion to exempt it from 38.
Objection.
No.
All right, while we're at it, item 11 then.
I would move that we insert wherever the proper place is an exemption from Title 38.
Objection. So ordered. Back up to line number 10, page 15. At the end of the sentence on line 5, after resources, the staff has suggested that we add words by written decision.
I move that language, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any objection? Within 90 days after receiving a request under Alaska statute, etc., the Commission of Natural Resources shall, by a written decision, from there on. Okay. Number 12. What is our problem on 12? Page 19.
Is that back?
What are the questions? Line 4.
I was not able to find out. See, I asked City Fairbanks, Citibank, which I haven't gotten an answer back, Mr. Chairman. They had to go to their zoning maps and all of that type of thing. I, for lack of a better notion, I move we remove Section 4243-90, number 42.
Mr. Chairman, before you do that, there may be a way at least that you can protect railroad operations. If you said instead of board mandate exclusive
time this was written, there was no specific authority for Alaska Railroad to have tax-exempt bonding. And this was put in there so that if the federal law did not give it that, then it would build a better case for it to have tax-exempt bonding.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, there is a bill pending in the House of Representatives right now that specifically takes the tax-exempt status away from the Alaska Railroad. It spells it out. It's there.
Who says it?
Mitzi Burks. I don't know who says it.
Kostikowski.
Okay, so same thing.
Chairman of the committee.
Right. And it's very specific, and it's meant to, it targets the Alaska Railroad. So I would say that if this doesn't do any harm, why don't we hedge our bets and leave this in here for now? The bill isn't going to leave the Senate anytime soon, I don't think. This can always come out if it needs be. But if we need to hedge our bets, depending on what the House is going to do, maybe this should stay in there.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we rescind our action on my motion.
So, item 13 is next.
I'm just telling you, you're going to get it.
19. 42, 40. We're still on 19, and where we're at here.
We need to
seems to cover the same process, page 19, 42, 40, and 420 federal land. Seems to cover the same process as authorized on 42, 40, 360, except that it eliminates DNR from the loop. Is this section really meant to get to the federal right-of-way reserves? If so, the staff suggests that the phrase rights-of-way across be inserted between off and federal on line 29. That would mean they would read this way, starting at line 27, the corporation may submit applications on its own behalf as an instrumentality of the state for acquisition of rights of way across federal land available under federal law that will enhance the operations of the corporation.
Senator Ferguson would really like that. Is that just rights of way, or is it gravel pits? The other. May I just ask Mr. Eby that?
The concern is that you've already agreed to have the normal process for DNR be used for obtaining federal land available to state entitlement. This, as it's written, suggests a possible conflict where they could go ahead on their own and apply perhaps to the entitlement program. The rights of way across was suggested because that's basically
right.
That's the only other type of thing that would come up, a form of application, a landfill application, where the corporation would be an applicant for right of way. I can check for you, but I know in Title 11 landfill, you can obtain additional land related to the right of way as part of a right of way application. It may be something a little broader to deal with the material side. This language may not be quite what you want. The problem is, without saying something, appears it's in conflict with what you've done before on page 17.
Page 17, we say DNR has to make all the applications.
Mr. Chairman, you authorize the railroad to nominate land like everyone else for state selection through our Department of Natural Resources. And this appears to give them the ability to get between the department and BLM in the process.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I don't think that's the effect at all. The railroad can have two ways to go. The railroad can go directly to the federal government for land, and if you add or right away, that's no problem. The railroad can also go to the state and request that it be part of the nomination process through the state's action to get federal land. The railroad board shouldn't be foolish enough to go to DNR and go to the federal government at the same time on the same piece of ground. But they ought to be able to use both mechanisms, whichever one is appropriate and works best, be it a right-of-way or be it fee simple on federal land or on state land. And if you just added the language rights-of-way across and put it in acquisition of rights-of-way across federal land or federal lands available under federal law, but give them both authorities and let them utilize whichever is the most efficient to proceed under. And they've got to recognize that if they're going to apply under the federal law at the same time they've got the state negotiating under selection rights, that they're killing their own troops.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I think your concern was that you don't give them the ability to preempt the state under the selection process. And this arguably could give them that ability.
What's the pleasure of the committee on this one, then?
we take the language that is staff language, then we would be restricting the application for federal land to rights of way. Is that correct? That's the way we understand it?
That's the way I understand it.
Okay. What Senator Halford just said was that we ought to allow them a broader way, which allows them to go acquire federal land. And if that were the case, and that was what the committee wanted to do, then we shouldn't even insert rights away, because it would be a redundant statement.
Right. It doesn't hurt to put rights away across or federal land. It doesn't matter because federal lands includes
sure.
You know, rights. Rights and lands. It is a right. So I don't think it's necessary, but my objection was taking out federal land.
And the statement from Mr. Hickey was, or Mr. Rogers, I can't remember, was that they didn't want to put the railroad in an adversary position to the state on land selection or state land selections. So it could be possible that the state has a selection. Or there's some federal land out there, and the state has land left in their selection. And the state could make a selection, the railroad can make a selection. And the federal entity that has to make that decision would have, if the railroad and the state could not come to some agreement on it, you could have a conflict.
Right, then we'll leave the word rights as we have. Crossed out.
I'm not saying either way. I'm just trying to understand the issue.
Go ahead, the motion.
I accept the wording as written on page 19, section
28. Without amendment.
Yes, sir.
Any objection? So ordered. Item 14 is. Page 20, State Department of Parks has requested they also be given the opportunity to apply to use railroad lands. The new title agreed municipal and state use railroad lands of line 4 will be changed to read municipal and state as would line 7. Do I have a motion?
Yes, I will move the table 14.
Any objection? So what? Page 33, line 19. Out of this in as a result of the transfer agreements itself?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And all this would do is, right now it says that they're to be adopted after transfer, and really you need to have those in place before transfer.
So they're effective the date of transfer.
Yeah, but the point of the whole thing is, we're not going to be negotiating before the transfer.
No, you won't be negotiating. The requirement on the federal bill is that for 2 years, though they are in place, railroad has to adopt them.
Mr. Chairman, this just makes it clear that they will be in effect on the date of transfer, so there's no gap potentially in before and after transfer with respect to the operation of collective bargaining agreements.
Transfer can't take place until the board has got its act together and ready to take the railroad. And part of getting its act together is to adopt by resolution, whatever, the existing collective bargaining agreements. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's right.
Okay.
I can understand that.
Let's see.
Mark, you may want to go ahead and make the change that Senator Fakes is getting at, which is to specify they'll be adopted. Not be effective until the date the adoption of this is not effective until the date of transfer. We can draft that.
Do you have a motion on it?
Yes, sir. I will so move that the adoption not be effective until the day of transfer.
Objection. So ordered. Okay, number 17. I don't know whether that will have any effect now or not. 17, page 37, line 15, had the following language. Within 180 days, the first meeting of the board of representatives of the employee bargaining unit shall implement ground rules for the renegotiation of collective bargaining agreements. Aren't we getting into the ball game here? We're talking about 6 months after.
Mr. Chairman, I might. This was an amendment proposed by the employees in the House a couple days ago. They may want to speak to it. I might say proposed and adopted by the House Transportation Committee.
Can you tell me why?
Basically, it was that we wouldn't be sitting around because of so many things that are going to be happening, putting the railroad administration together, that we're not forgotten. And we've got a way to start negotiating these contracts so that we don't end up 6 months before the 2 years is up and don't have any contracts to be negotiated because we're not sure where we're going to end up at the end of the year. We don't get some way, some tool to get going on renegotiating.
Mr. Chairman,
this mandate.
If I could speak to that, I think that is a good point. I'm not hung up necessarily on 180 days, but I think the concept, because that, all that says is that they have to have some ground rules that lay out how they're going to handle, and that's a very, very important point where you've got a new board of directors and correct me if I'm wrong, that it's been a long time since there's really been any bargaining done with employees of the Alaska Railroad. It's been almost an evergreen type of contract.
We bargained portions at a time.
Yeah.
We've never bargained a whole contract.
Okay. And I do think that's, because otherwise what could happen is if all of a sudden you only got a short period of time left to crunch together what should be a longer look at the collective bargaining.
The only thing I have trouble with is 180 days. Can we make it within the first 6 months? Can we just extend the period a little bit so that this wasn't the first issue that hits their desk? Would that be a room?
Like I said, I was not hung up on 180 days. I just think
the only thing bothers me about the 180 days is all the rules.